November 2006, in a ditch outside Atlantic City.
Me and my friend were taking a walk down the path, saw the railroad tracks. There's a dead woman down there.
Police discover more bodies. Bizarrely, all of them are facing east. What kind of predator lines up his prey?
Somebody saw something. Come on, they carried four bodies out there.
Right.
Somebody knows something. It's just everybody's not talking.
Can I find someone who will speak up before the eastbound strangler kills again? I'm M. William Phelps, best-selling crime author, and I have an obsession. Serial killer, cold cases.
Now, nearly 10 years later, investigators say they still need the public's help.
For me, it's personal. My sister-in-law was murdered, and her killer has never been caught. These killers are still out there. Their victims deserve justice. And just one new clue could make all the difference. I don't have a badge, but I do have something the cops don't have. Someone who understands the dark mind of a murderer.
Boy, I'm telling you, nobody can hear her scream.
Because he is one. Four murders in the space of just 1 month. The victims were all young women caught up in the local drug scene. Three of them were also known prostitutes. No wonder the working girls of Atlantic City are now living in terror.
The prosecutor now says that along with his office and local departments, that the U.S. Justice Department, the FBI and state police, and federal and state forensic laboratories are all investigating the crimes.
A nationwide task force has worked over 200,000 man hours on these murders. But the eastbound strangler is still out there. I need to pick up his trail before he kills again. My starting point in a hunt is veteran criminal profiler John Kelly. He's already put in his share of man hours on this case, and then some.
He's killed four in approximately 1 month. We have a man on fire here.
For over 20 years, Kelly's worked with New Jersey State Police and the FBI to help identify and apprehend serial killers.
If he's leaving them out, he's leaving them out to say something.
He wants to come back and look at them.
In 2006, Kelly profiled the eastbound strangler, and he's agreed to share his notes and contacts with me.
If you take a look at the structure, how he has the girls approximately 60 feet apart. 1, 2, 3, 4. This is a very structured individual.
There's one contact of Kelly's who could be my best chance at cracking this case. He's a secret consultant Kelly usually keeps to himself. Only Kelly can talk to him, and there's a strict protocol that must be followed.
We have a time to talk. I have to always give him an idea of what I want the conversation to focus on, because he can only speak for 15 minutes at a time.
Sometimes 15 minutes gets him nothing. Sometimes 15 seconds is all he needs.
The conversations are tense, because you never know what he's going to say next.
His tips can lead you nowhere, or be the key to solving a case.
He doesn't have a degree in criminology, he's not a psychologist, and he's not a homicide detective.
So who is he? He's an incarcerated serial killer. Kelly calls him 13.
Hi, John.
The Atlantic City killer.
Oh, yes.
13 knows this case. And as wrong as it sounds, it's one of his favorites.
You know, this happened during the, I believe it was the Democratic Convention in Atlantic City. That had to bring every hooker out from the deepest dark alleys when a convention is in town.
Can you tell me why you think this guy in Atlantic City strangled him? He didn't stab them, he didn't shoot them, he didn't hit them over. He strangled them. Why strangle?
Oh, let me see. When you strangle somebody, and that's close and up personal, you can feel the life just flow out of the body. Also, he could strangle him because he knows he has to move the bodies and he doesn't want any blood in his car. I think he wanted to see his victims suffer. And I think he did that very, very well. That's it.
Sounds like 13 not only understands the eastbound strangler's mind, he also admires his work.
A lot of these guys are into strangling, because that is the ultimate power and control in a way, because you can actually play God. They strangle them until they go out of consciousness, then they bring them back to consciousness, then they strangle them out again. They keep reliving it over and over, and then finally they do kill them.
For a serial killer, that power is like a drug, and it's never long before they need another hit. To pick up this guy's trail, I'm gonna have to visit some dark places.
Most important thing is you keep a focus on your safety. That's
well, I'm gonna focus on this case. I wanna solve this case. I think it's definitely solvable, and I think the girls on the street have answers. That's what I'm after, answers.
Bright lights of Atlantic City lure all kinds of people. It's the promise of a good time and maybe some good luck. That's what brought Molly Jean Diltz here when she was just 20 years old. She left Black Lick, Pennsylvania, where the brightest light in town is the gas station, and headed 400 miles east to the city of dreams.
Well, here we are, Atlantic City. At one time, this was, you know, Frank Sinatra, Bing Crosby, all the bigwigs, the Rat Pack, coming into town.
But young Molly Diltz never got a taste of that old world glamour. A run of bad luck and some drug troubles later, she hit rock bottom. Then, sometime in October 2006, she became the first victim of the eastbound strangler.
We used to come here as a family. It's funny, coming into town, I come out on the boardwalk for the first time in 30 years, and that first smell brought me right back.
But this time, it's no vacation. I'm looking for a killer. The Atlantic County Prosecutor's Office is keeping a tight lid on their information in this case, so I've had to find alternative sources. I've arranged a meeting with retired homicide detective Tim Braun, a cold case veteran who has worked over 500 murders. Ever heard of the Angel of Death, Charles Cullen? The most prolific serial killer in New Jersey history. Tim Braun caught him. I'm thinking his insight could lead me closer to the eastbound strangler.
So what does your experience tell us about this killer?
Well, it's my opinion it's a individual who is local to the area. And I believe he returned on several occasions, not just to dispose the bodies, but also to revisit in some sick way revisit his work.
Is there a sexual element to it?
I believe so, especially in this type of a case. There is a fantasy. It's basically reliving the fantasy when he revisits his victims.
He may have kept the victim's footwear as a bit of a trophy, another way to revisit his crime without actually going to the scene.
You think this guy killed before he killed here?
I would have to say yes. That's my gut feeling, that these unfortunate incidents are not the first for this person.
One big question in this case is the cluster of bodies. Does that mean a burial site or a murder site or both?
Would this guy, right, dispose of bodies? Any serial killer dispose of bodies in the area where he worked and played?
Sure. Serial killers will dispose bodies generally in an area that they're comfortable in, and that could be anywhere for them. Their comfort zone is where they feel safe, non-threatened, and they will take their chances.
Tim Braun makes me think this killer is into the full psychological experience, not just the kill itself. And now I'm wondering if the structured placement of the bodies, evenly spaced and facing east, is part of some ritualized sexual fantasy. If the killer is local, maybe he's known on the street.
When I was a kid here, you know, the one thing you knew was never step on this side of the boardwalk, because on this side of the boardwalk, anything could happen.
Behind the casino strip lies a wasteland known to locals as the Track. Most of the hookers here are addicts, which means they'll go with anyone and do anything to get their fix. The perfect hunting ground for a sexual psychopath like the Eastbound Strangler. I need to find out what kind of perverted urges motivate this killer. But am I prepared for the answer?
It just seems to almost happen randomly at first, but then the individual seems to like it.
In boots and waders, investigators hoped to reveal new clues in a murder case that's gained worldwide attention.
I'm in Atlantic City, New Jersey, on the trail of a killer with a curious signature. He takes his victim's shoes and poses their bodies in a line facing east. Just a few years have passed since four innocent women were snatched from these streets. And that means a working girl like Tina here could be next.
Do you feel safe out here?
Nah.
Have you ever met a man who put his hands around your throat?
Tried to. I maced him.
You maced him? Tell me about that. When was that?
7 months ago.
But why did he put his... What was the impetus for him to put his hands around your throat?
A lot of men like to feel that power, that they have that power over you. I don't know what it is. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist. I haven't figured them out yet. But they like that power.
Did Tina narrowly escape becoming the Eastbound Strangler's fifth victim? Or is this kind of violence just an occupational hazard for the streetwalkers out here? Prostitution is a deadly business. Like some of the girls out here, my sister-in-law would do anything to get drugs, and she was murdered, leaving behind her three young kids, my brother, and the stillborn child she was carrying. It's hard for me, seeing girls like Tina risking their lives for a fix. But these days, in Atlantic City, working girls aren't the only women looking over their shoulder.
Are we safe to walk our streets? Are we not safe to walk our streets? I'm a woman working in Atlantic City. I have to come here every single day.
Terry, tell me how Atlantic City has changed over the years.
When I grew up here, we never locked our doors. We walked from Ventnor City to Atlantic City, to New Hampshire Avenue, back, go to the boardwalk, go on the rides. You never feared nothing. It was safe, it was fun.
Terry's bartended here for years. She says everything changed after the Eastbound Strangler.
What was the vibe like around here after the girls were found murdered?
Scared. You didn't want to look at the guy next to you. The guy next to you was the murderer. That's how scary it was. It's still that way, because nobody knows who it was. Nobody know who did it.
How does it make you feel to think that a serial killer may have come in here and you may have served him a drink?
Sick to my stomach. Scared. He's the ghost. He could be you. He could be the guy I just served 2 minutes ago. Nobody wants to be out there when there's somebody loose that murdered four women for absolutely no reason.
Terry, how would you feel if they caught this guy?
It has to be solved. I would feel very happy. I would feel like they did their job. Now we're safe. We know it was being investigated. We know it was being taken care of. And it settled. And put the guy away. He murdered four girls. You can't stigmatize because they're prostitutes or they're heroin addicts or they're cocaine addicts. They're human beings. They're people. They don't deserve to die like that. Nobody does.
The Eastbound Strangler is still out there. And he's got the women of Atlantic City living in fear. Barbara Brader was his second victim. She was last seen leaving her home in nearby Ventnor, New Jersey on October 17, 2006. After working as a cocktail waitress, she had turned to prostitution to feed her drug habit. Barbara used heroin around the time of her murder. Large quantities were found in her body.
These girls are objects to him. They're only objects. This is all about him and his pleasure. And murder is his pleasure.
I've come back to meet again with my profiling contact, John Kelly, who's given me access to his secret weapon. An incarcerated murderer who helps him catch killers.
I'm dealing with the man who's killed people. I mean, who's gotten up close and personal and murdered people.
We can't reveal the details of his crimes, but there's no doubt 13 knows about killing.
I have learned different things about the psychopathic criminal mind that I could not have learned in any classes or in any books. It gives me a better understanding for the predator than I'm hunting.
I want to know, is the Eastbound Strangler taking his victims' shoes as trophies, or is it something else?
You know, there was a cluster site of four women. Their shoes were gone. This guy had a foot fetish.
Interesting. 13 agrees that the shoes are trophies, but he sees a sexual aspect too, a fetish.
The girls were posed in an area facing east?
That's correct, yes. Why did he do that? Tell me why.
That's it.
Hung up on by a serial killer. What is this, mind games? Is 13 holding out on us or just bluffing?
He has rules. He has to keep his power and his control in place.
See, I could never.
We have to play
the
game.
I'm glad you're dealing with him because I could never deal with somebody like that.
We have to play the game.
Who's gonna call the shots for me? No serial killer gonna call the shots for me.
And you know, I understand that with you, yeah. But I have to keep intellect over emotion. He is very important to me, the information he has. And I'm not gonna let emotion destroy a relationship.
It's no kind of relationship I want. But I admit, 13 has given me one good lead to chase. Does the Eastbound Strangler have a foot fetish? To dig deeper, I'm meeting an expert in abnormal sexuality, clinical psychologist Dr. Ed Mirsky.
A foot fetish is, you know, some individual, it's almost always a male, very, very rarely a female. Most of these cases, they do start in adolescence, and they continue to most of a person's lifetime. It's a very sexually powerful, stimulating experience for them. Regular, average kind of sexual encounters don't do much for these people. They want this, the more kinky stuff. They'll take these items and they either rub them on their face or their hands, or they smell them, or they touch them somehow. So even though they're not committing a murder, they're in between, they've got the fantasies going, and the great majority of these men never commit any serious crimes. But some do. Some do become violent, even to the point of murder.
It seems, for this killer, a foot fetish may just be part of a twisted web of psychopathic behavior. But one of the strangest elements of the case is still nagging at me. Why did this guy dump the bodies facing east? A lot of theories have been put forward since these crimes were committed. One of them is so controversial, it might just be true. It involves a suspect for whom facing east is a matter of religious conviction.
The women that were dumped in this drainage ditch were laid out with their heads pointing east toward Mecca.
Atlanta County prosecutors said investigators are pursuing a variety of leads, but would not comment on the amount of progress they've made.
In Atlantic City, the eastbound strangler is targeting vulnerable women mixed up in drugs and prostitution. It's familiar territory for me. My sister-in-law, Diana, was once a vulnerable woman, too, before somebody strangled her to death. So hunting this killer feels very personal. In November 2005, he took his third victim, 23-year-old Tracy Ann Roberts. It's believed she died approximately 2 weeks after Molly Jean Diltz, and perhaps just a few days after Barbara Brader. An autopsy revealed Tracy Roberts died of asphyxiation.
She was a baby. I knew her for quite a while, but she was very quiet, very inward, and kept to herself most of the time. If you see her,
I've returned to the dark side of the boardwalk, the track, to meet a friend of Tracy's named Zandra.
And with her one day being here, the next day gone, doesn't that scare you?
I wish it did. Like, people have asked me that, I wish it did, but like, fear, I don't carry fear like most people do.
Zandra sounds just like my sister-in-law before she was murdered. Addiction and good judgment just don't go together.
And I've been trying to get away from here as long as I've been here, and it kind of just sucks you in and you get stuck out here. You leave and you come back, you always find yourself coming back.
I see that you caught yourself. It bothers me. You're so little that any man could just, you know, kill you. And you say you don't have any fear left. I don't understand that.
I don't either.
You know, it breaks my heart to sit here and talk to you because you're a little girl, man. You're just a little girl. I don't have those feelings about every girl I meet, but you knew these girls. You know, I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your slump. You feel every day for these girls, but you're still here. And that I don't get.
Maybe Zandra knows something we don't. Has the eastbound strangler already moved on?
Why do you think the murder stopped?
Well, I don't even know if they did stop. I think maybe nothing else happened here because, you know, they were found and whoever did it had to lay low, whoever he was, whoever he is.
The question is, will he come back?
I believe that'll happen. I believe he'll come back and hit at some point in time.
Can you promise me that you'll be careful? All right?
Yeah.
This case is getting under my skin, bringing back painful memories of my sister-in-law, Diana. But I need to stay focused. I'm on my way to meet a source who in 2006 alerted the public to a potential suspect in this case. My contact is an Atlantic City reporter who covered the murders.
We got a call that someone had reported that they had basically stumbled across bodies right outside the city limits.
Me and my friend were taking a walk down the path by the railroad tracks. There's a dead woman down there.
We ended up getting some photos at the site of body bags being zipped up, that kind of thing, but nothing too graphic. But it was difficult to get an actual visual on a lot of stuff because the police had us push back so far. But there was a lot of police activity, lots of investigators going around taking samples.
Not long after the bodies were discovered, he got a call from a local man who claimed police were eyeing him for the crimes. The caller had a record for drug offenses, was known to associate with prostitutes, and knew two of the victims. But there was another reason the man believed police suspected him. He's Muslim.
So tell me how you first heard about this story.
Well, he believed that he was a suspect, and that many other people believed he was a suspect because of his Muslim background, and the fact that the women that were dumped in this drainage ditch were laid out with their heads pointing east toward Mecca. So a lot of people believed that there was some sort of Muslim connection and that the killer was a Muslim.
Devout Muslims pray five times a day, facing towards the holy city of Mecca in Saudi Arabia, due east of the U.S. It is also Muslim custom to lay out the dead barefoot, with their heads towards the same sacred site. Is the eastbound strangler killing according to his religious beliefs? In 2006, police questioned the Muslim man. But suddenly, new information on another suspect came to light that sent the investigation into a frenzy. A local prostitute bravely came forward and revealed that one of her Johns had copped to the crimes. To investigators, it seemed like a solid lead. The man, who can't be named for legal reasons, was a maintenance worker who sometimes lived at one of the dive hotels bordering the drainage ditch. And he had a conviction for a sex offense. I need to check this guy out. So I'm heading to the site to meet a former cop who was involved in the investigation. Retired Atlantic City police captain, Jim Hutchins.
Hey, Matt, nice to meet you.
Thanks for meeting me.
Great day today.
Yeah, beautiful day.
As we drive along the drainage ditch, I can't help but feel like it's a gutter for broken dreams. These girls came to Atlantic City for a new life. They got an early grave instead.
So Jim, tell me about this person of interest.
He was, I guess, an employee or working at the motel. He was living here, supposedly in that room or a room real close by.
So, I mean, it's so convenient. There's a path right here. There's a door there. There's a room there. So even if he's partying in there with the girl, smoking some crack, doing some heroin, or just having sex, after he's done, he could strangle her right there, drag her across here, pose her towards the east, put her face down, go back in the room, clean up his business, and head out of there. I mean, how hard would that be?
Right, if that room was the crime scene.
If it was the crime scene.
The location of the crime scene, where the girls were killed, has never been confirmed. Could have been miles away.
He could have killed them anywhere, had him in his car, trunk of the car, in his van, and drove here and dumped them.
That raises another question. Is this path along the drainage ditch really so hard to find?
You can see between these hotels there's access to somewhere. back here. This is not a secret location. So anybody could find this path here. You could drive down and dump stuff.
That means a suspect who lives in one of the hotels is not as significant as it first appeared. And Hutchins reveals, after being held for months while he was investigated, even DNA tested, the maintenance man was released without charge. Even the prostitute who pointed the finger later retracted her statement. After questioning the Muslim person of interest also went nowhere, the investigation stalled. But Hutchins has a theory that could answer a big riddle of the case. He's got a radical new perspective on the eastward position of the bodies. What if it was just an accident? What if it was caused by a surge of storm water flowing through the drainage ditch?
That's not a stagnant body of water.
It seems to be a current.
It flows out into the back bay eventually, follows between the tracks and Route 40. So there is movement, so could you make a case that the movement of the water moved the faces to go east? I would say yes.
If Hutchins' theory is right, then one of the central mysteries of this case, the eastbound signature, is a red herring. And maybe these murders aren't the beginning of a larger pattern after all.
Could this be a one-off killing spree? Could this guy have killed these four prostitutes and stopped?
See, I don't believe that. I believe, and you know this, Matthew, that serial killers kill to live and live to kill. He can't stop killing, okay? He's addicted to killing, just like 13.
But 13 can't kill anymore, so he lives through the murders of others. In the depths of his cell, he's been comparing the eastbound strangler with another cold case out in New York. Has he found a connection?
I think he's not in Atlantic City anymore.
By mid-2006, two persons of interest in the eastbound strangler case had been proven dead ends, and the investigation stalled. I've been combing the streets, searching for the tracks of this killer, but his trail is cold. Profiler John Kelly says all serial killers are addicts, and they won't stop until they're caught. But does his own serial killer consultant, 13, agree?
Somebody that can kill so many women and not leave a clue has to be pretty smart.
Right.
Has to be pretty smart.
Why do you think he stopped killing?
Oh, I don't think he did. I think he's not in Atlantic City anymore. Now, this case is very similar to the one on Long Island.
13 is referring to these unsolved murders in New York State. Between late 2010 and early 2011, the remains of 10 murder victims were discovered in Long Island, just 130 miles from Atlantic City. Investigators believe the six sets of remains found in 2011 are the victims of multiple killers. But they think a serial killer may be responsible for the four female victims discovered in December 2010. The four women were all prostitutes, and one went missing as early as July 2007, only months after the Atlantic City victims were found. Did the eastbound strangler leave New Jersey and continue killing in Long Island? Some high-ranking officers in law enforcement believe he did, and so does 13.
This almost mirrors the Atlantic City case.
Several of the bodies in Long Island were found underwater, and 13 has a theory about that, too.
This guy has a boat. He invites a young lady out on his boat. Boy, I'm telling you, Nobody can hear her scream. That's it.
Atlantic City and Long Island authorities are sharing information as they investigate potential links between the murders. 13 thinks the same killer is responsible, but I'm thinking we need a second opinion. Kelly has someone in mind, a colleague. Frank Adamson, former chief of detectives, King County Police Department.
Nice to meet you, Frank. Thanks for coming.
He commanded the task force that brought down Gary Ridgway, America's most prolific serial killer. Frank is one of the foremost experts on outdoor crime scenes, so maybe he can help us figure out the two sets of murders are connected.
From what I've heard of the Long Island cases, this guy really knows what he's doing. He's covering his evidence. He's on top of it. He didn't want the bodies found right away. In Atlantic City, you're going to find those bodies. I don't see the signature in the Long Island cases that appears in the Atlantic City case, the shoe fetish, for example. I think it's important to look at them, but I don't think there's a connection.
Frank also points out that the Long Island bodies were not facing east. But I have to challenge him there on that one.
The significance of the heads on these women facing east, we're not buying really, because the water's tidal. Water rises, and the current moves east. This whole thing about a Muslim facing the bodies or, you know, some sort of significance, I think the current did it.
Well, I don't believe that. I think that indeed he did place them facing east. And I don't see the water, the current, in this particular case, as being significant.
So if the killer is facing the bodies east, why? From where the bodies were found, Atlantic City is due east. Frank sees a possible connection there.
Thinking about the placement of the victims facing Atlantic City, he may see this as Sin City, and he may be a gambler who has lost a lot of money, and the prostitutes also take his money.
Whatever it is, Frank knows one thing for sure.
This killer hates women. It doesn't matter that they're prostitutes. It doesn't matter anything else about them. They're simply vulnerable and easy to pick up. They're easy victims. This guy wanted to kill women.
Frank's given us some great insight, but I still don't know if the Atlantic City and Long Island cases are connected or not. We know the Long Island bodies were not facing east, but if the eastbound signature was just an accident, then that's not important anymore. What most intrigues investigators is that the two groups of victims share multiple connections. Several of the girls knew each other and may even have shared clients. And the last victim in Atlantic City, Kim Raffo, had been staying in Long Island just weeks before her murder. In 2002, Kim left her husband and two children in Florida and came to Atlantic City. And in just a few months, she went from PTA mom to junkie. Kim battled her addiction for the sake of her kids, but she could never stay clean. Eventually, she turned to prostitution in order to feed her habit. Her lifeless body was found by two women, face down in a drainage ditch.
Me and my friend were taking a walk down the path by the railroad tracks. There's a dead woman down there.
Today, I'm meeting with Kim Raffo's husband, Hugh Oslander. He's been outspoken in the media about the desperate need to find Kim's killer before more innocent women become victims.
Well, if anybody out there knows anything, I really encourage them to come forward.
How did you hear about Kim's death?
The last time that I spoke to her, it was just a quick conversation. You could see that she was avoiding any type of help. She didn't want any help at all, and I was like, didn't know what to do. And then 2 days later, my brother-in-law happened to call me, and he told me that Kim was dead. I thought at first that she had committed suicide. Then when I found out that it was multiple people and that it was a serial killer, I was devastated. I tried to call her on her cell phone, and somebody answered. And I was like, Kim, Kim, and they wound up hanging up. And then I called back again and went to voicemail, and I said to her, Kim, please tell me you're not dead. Please call me back. Please let me know everything's all right. I need to know right away.
Male voice on the cell phone?
I just heard commotions. I didn't hear voices. I just heard, like, somebody was doing something, like they accidentally answered, maybe.
Hugh told police about the call, but the lead went nowhere. So he tried his own investigation.
I was literally on the streets knocking on doors, asking people. I was going up to the gangs, talking to them about it. I was on the streets pushing for information.
Hugh believes Kim and the other victims were lured out to the drainage ditch on Black Horse Pike and killed there.
None of the girls liked to go out to the pike. It was far from the streets where they felt more secure. So I think that somehow, some way, that this guy must have lured them out there. Either, you know, said, oh yeah, I got some drugs, let's jump in a cab. Possibly, I don't know exactly where there is. It could have been any one of the hotels on the pike.
Was the crime scene one of those seedy hotel rooms after all? I head back to the track to see what the girls have to say about the pike. Am I about to get my biggest break in the case?
You just saw a whole change come over on.
Really?
It was really scary, yeah.
The murder of four women in Atlantic City has remained a mystery since 2006. But cold cases like this can still be solved by hard work, determination, and a bit of luck. I've got no problem with hard work, but you can't choose luck. It comes when you least expect it.
I just want to say thank you very much for being brave and telling me your story.
You're welcome.
This local girl has a story to tell that could blow this case open. She doesn't want to be identified because she fears for her life. She says she was working as a prostitute with victim number four, Kim Raffo, about a week before Kim was murdered. After they were picked up by two black males, the informant and another girl traveled in the men's van to a hotel room for a party. There was another John there, a white male. Kim Raffo was there too, and two other girls, but something wasn't right.
And what happened next?
In the first bed was Kim Raffo, and in the other bed was two bodies, and they were laying still on their backs. The whole time we were there, they never moved. And then we turned around and we looked at Kim and we said, who's that and who are they? And she was like, I don't know, they weren't there when I went to sleep.
Wow. And what did you think right at that moment?
I really didn't put two and two together because I thought, you know, everybody was smoking crack and maybe they were just comatose.
The informant now believes the two bodies were Barbara Brader and Tracy Ann Roberts, victims two and three.
So tell me about these guys and what they liked as far as sex. I mean, were they into, like, your feet, for example?
The one guy, yeah, he had a little foot fetish. He wanted to massage your feet.
A foot fetish? It has to be more than a coincidence. The party moved on to another hotel.
The one black guy stayed behind, and the rest of us went in the van and we went and got a room.
Where was the room? On Black Horse Pike, alongside the drainage ditch where the victims' bodies will later be found.
But then the white male leaves.
He's like, no, I gotta go take care of something. So he left.
Did he leave to dump Tracy and Barbara's bodies?
Anyway, he comes back later on, and it started to become a really scary situation.
You know we're not having a good
time. It's like a glaze came over and just kept repeating, I did something terrible in my past. I did something terrible in my past. They started really bugging out, and it scared me because they were calling us names, and, you know, the one guy grabbed the one girl's neck like he was gonna choke her, and it was really freakish, and I just knew right then and there it wasn't a good situation.
Let's go, come on.
I just grabbed my stuff and left. Later on down the line, the girl that I was with in the beginning told me that the one guy tried to strangle her to death, and she gotten away, but Kim stayed. And that was the last time any of us saw Kim.
To me, the connections are powerful. Foot fetish, strangulation, a hotel on Black Horse Pike, and two bodies. Then a week later, Kim Raffo was found dead.
The girl that I was with, she went to the press and stuff like that. She wanted me to call to the press as well, but I was scared.
So you're telling me, based on the information that your friend provided, they arrested these guys?
Yes.
And what happened next?
They didn't have any physical evidence, any DNA. They had the guys, and they had to let them go.
How do you feel about those guys being responsible for these murders? Are those the guys?
I believe in my heart they are.
Have you seen them since?
No.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Without physical evidence, sometimes police have no choice but to release strong suspects. Did these three men get away with murder, then move to Long Island and take four more victims? We can't know for sure. What we do know is the killer or killers are still out there. And to bring them to justice, police need your help.